and I couldn't swear, and I had to wear a dress or something. It was about one in Ballard a long time ago, and I was like, oh. And I did such a good job not swearing.
Oh, the Sunday night one.
Yeah, and then it wasn't even recorded. I was like, oh. This is the cuss words.
Angel, I shared that meeting.
Hi, Angel Alcoholic.
Hi, Angel.
And man, the heat, the body heat in this room. My birthday is 11/16/03, and I have a sponsor who has a sponsor, and they're actually in the car on the way here. And Terry is going to speak after me. And I have one sponsee in the crowd. And I know the guy in the corner for a really long time because I got sober at Fremont Hall. And she said we were talking about service. And I don't even know the name of this meeting. What's the name of this meeting?
Seattle Group.
All right, Seattle Group. So, yeah, I get to speak after Ralph second time. That's pretty cool. And then I'm in between Kenny and Ralph. That's awesome. So part of, you know, when I first got sober, I had a sponsor who had me do things that I thought was ridiculous. Like, you know, talk to the guys at the gas station or the people who came to my table, but not just like the high normal. She's like, ask 3 questions about themselves or their kids. And what she did is get me out of myself. And I have done some therapy since I've gotten sober, and it was pointed out to me that I always was given as a child. And I grew up in an alcoholic home, and it was really an ugly household, and it's not why I drank or drugged, but I used to take care of the little animals, and then my great-grand, I'd always visit my great-grandma's room and stay when I went to my grandma's house. And then she got put in a nursing home, and I used to go down there and visit them and talk to them. So it was always kind of just in my blood to be with other people, I think, because it makes me happy. And part of that too is probably that I was away from my mom and the madness at home. But the one of my favorite parts of this book, and I was I had a couple of first sponsors because I didn't really do the deal at first, and each time I got a new sponsor for different reasons that I started over in the book, which was amazing because my first sponsor, like my 4-step was one word, like 3 reasons why you're mad, descriptive, and then it was like, and I was like, ooh, and it was fast, and it was, she pointed out that I was always a victim and I didn't have to do that anymore. It was a really big deal, and it also let me know when I was sitting around Fremont Hall and, you know, when people did talk about the steps there, no, just kidding, when they talked about stuff, any meeting, that I started to feel like I belong because I understand the language. And that was a big deal for me because I never really thought or felt that I belonged anywhere, that I was always different. And I remember when I came to Fremont Hall, Bjorn always used to say, welcome to the unique club, because everybody thinks they're unique. And that one of those first sponsors, she was amazing. She, you know, they say you have to get sober for yourself. You can't do it for anybody else. And for me, I think I thought that was the craziest thing I ever heard in my life and didn't make any sense because I didn't like myself. And I had no self-esteem or self-worth, and I was content with my life and how I was running the show. And so I wasn't going to get sober for myself. It just didn't make sense. And she said, you know, you never know if you do this deal and do the work, and then, you know, you're in a meeting and you could say something, or you sponsor somebody who sponsors somebody who sponsors somebody, and that person can find the cure for cancer, or that person could, you know, change the world, or even save one person's life, you know, or stop one person from picking up that day that could have been driving and gotten an accident and killed the family. Like, you just never know the domino effect. I never know the domino effect of my actions and my words, and doing this deal with God and a sponsor, the God of my understanding. I grew up with the word God, so I just use it, and it's totally different than what I grew up with. And that also scared me when I got here. I didn't know what God had to do with me getting sober. I just wanted to wake up not sick anymore, and you know, now today I know that's totally different. And doing the work, I found a God of my understanding, and he's pretty awesome. And in retrospect, he carried me all the way. So on 124, the family afterward, wait, I need my glasses. Oh my God, I just turned 50 now. I need my glasses everywhere. I just became a grandma. Life is good. And Alcoholics Anonymous, who would have known I wanted to do those two things, be 50 and a grandma. that's awesome. I get to, and I'm still alive too. So it says, showing others who suffer how we were given help is the very thing which makes life seem so worthwhile to us now. Cling to the thought that in God's hands, the dark past is the greatest possession you have, the key to life and happiness for others. With it, you can avert death and misery for them. And that's really powerful. So all of the things, you know, like I said, I grew up in an alcoholic home. I ended up, you know, doing some street stuff and living a lifestyle that I never want my daughter to do. And once I got the green light to go and help others, and also my sponsor used to say, go to Fremont Hall, and I'd be like, whatever I was doing, because I can't remember anything anymore, but I was probably whining and complaining a lot. She'd ask me, what are you afraid of? And then the second thing, she'd be like, go to Fremont, sit down, and find somebody who looks worse off than you, and then talk to them, like, about what? Like, I had 30 days, or whatever it was. And she said, it doesn't matter. She said, open the big book and open it to the first 164 pages and just start reading. And I was like, okay. And there actually was a girl, she was younger, and she just so happened to have some issues around sex, and I so happened to be kind of a professional in that area from my past. Put it on my resume. So I was like, I didn't know anything about this book, but she said, open it up, the first 164, it'll be in there, and lo and behold, it was. And so I didn't know what I was, you know, and it wasn't me, it was God. And the big deal about that is that I was willing to listen to that woman and do what she suggested, and I did it, and every time it saved my bacon. And I remember the first time I stood at one of these, I had 21 days, and my sponsor, she always used to like sit in the front row of things and make me sit up there, and I'm like, no, I always had my back against the wall and had to see everybody coming in. And we went to Limerlana Club, and she said, I'm going to share my time with you. And I didn't know, never been to a speaker meeting, didn't know anything. And so when we went there, it was this. And she's like, you get to talk for 10 minutes. And I'm like, whatever. And then it was like a heart attack. And I don't know what I said. And I remember, I don't know if he's alive anymore, but a gentleman from Vermont came up to me afterwards, like, we share in a general way. And I'm like, I know that I share in a general way about certain things, but I was just like, whatever. So he's on my first 4 step. But that was a really amazing experience. I remember how high I felt after that. And I even called my mom, lo and behold. And that, because women, and I know I talked about putting my son up for adoption, and women came up to me, you know, women that had more time and older, like that, more was all the stuff, right? Had it together, and we made a connection. And so that kind of stuff kind of just kept me coming back, because she'd tell me this, you know, this will happen. And, you know, I was suicidal when I got here, and we were at another meeting, and she said, sit in the front. And she's like, so she'd always do this, talk, talk. And I'm like, no, I didn't want to talk. And so she says, tell people about that you were suicidal, you know, and you've been to prison, like, your story. And then I mentioned that I was suicidal when I got here or something, and somebody, and she's like, you never know who's life's going to touch. Somebody's going to have felt that way. And then as soon as that meeting was over, a guy came up to me and was like, you felt like committing suicide? Like, and I was like, why do I look like that? Like, so it was very interesting. And you know, Austrey, Terry is my sponsor. Austrey is my grand sponsor. They're going to be here. Hopefully the accident clears up and everybody's okay and they get here. And so you can hear Terry. She's amazing. I call her my wise owl. But I thought I was going to run late because I had nothing to wear. I live in leggings and a tank top. It's kind of my uniform because I like to be comfortable. And so I was like digging around, and I have this other closet with like dress up clothes or whatever for photos. And I was like, I went in there, and then I was like, you know, that guy with the suicide. So it's funny because I also was told, and I remember this clearly, like, don't judge your insides by other people's outsides. And so when I was first told, like, you gotta dress up to go to the speaker's meeting, you know, suit up, show, all whatever stuff, and then like, but this is not, you know, I've been to jail, I've been to prison, all the stuff. Somebody in a fancy suit I really wouldn't relate to or ever think that I would be like that. And then knowing, being new in myself, I'd be like playing. So, but here I am willing. I know, I was like, do I look like I'm getting married or something? This is a cool 70s, 60s outfit that I got at whatever. It is pretty amazing. I'm like, I never get to wear it. So I guess I should be grateful I got to wear it. But yeah, and you know, I have a sponsee here, and we have the same amount of time, and it's amazing. So we've been together a long time, and it's like this is the deal. We walk hand in hand, and the other sponsees and the women that I work with, it's like I always get way more out of them. I always learn more from them than I think that I could ever teach them, and I don't ever consider myself a teacher because, you know, just. This is the textbook, Alcoholics Anonymous. I was told this is our basic text. It says it in there, and I am truly grateful for that. So how much time do I have, Graham? I guess we're waiting, or, oh, look at that. Oh, it's 15 minutes. I thought, I'm bad with numbers. Yeah, what else? Oh, so when I got sober, I lived in an auction house, and I started watching Animal Planet, and I wanted to be a vet tech, and I got my GED in prison, so I wasn't sure how that was going to work out because I wasn't going to go back to school. I did go back to school for a second, and then I missed a couple days, and math was too hard, and I gave up. So there's that. Numbers. But what happened is that my boyfriend at the time, he lived in Oxford House by Northgate Veterinary Clinic, and I would drive by there, and I was always drawn to it, but I would be in some kind of crazy punk rock outfit or something, and I'm like, I can't go in like this. And a woman in my Oxford House, or a girl, you know, whatever, she came in and was like, I actually had a job interview there, and I'm like, oh, how did it go? Like, what? And she said, oh, they wanted me to clean chemicals and clean up poop. I can't do that. And I was like, I can. Like, I'm not too good to pick up poop. Like, I don't know where you've been, but so I went up there and I applied and I got the job. And I remember the girl was like 10 years younger than me, but you know, they were all a little hot and kicked it. Bless you. And it was really interesting because wherever I go, no matter what, I always think for some reason people don't like me. And that's just obviously ingrained from somewhere in my back, but they started Employee of the Month when I was there, because I had like 2 years, I think, at the time. I was super happy, or it was before 2 years, and I celebrated 2 years, and I was in the surgery room cleaning up, and one girl said something about one day at a time, and I'm like, sometimes it's 1 minute at a time, and then she's like, are you? And she wasn't, but she knew, and it was my 2 year birthday, and so when I was leaving, she said, happy birthday, and I was like, oh. And then, because I know you're not supposed to like tell people, or I was afraid maybe I'll lose my job because I hear all that stuff. And then the girls actually, because I was like, let me draw blood or give shot. Like, I can do all of that really well. Just let me try. And then I did it, and they were amazed. And I became a vet tech like really quick. Like, they were like, wow, good skills. And so then when they found out, they're like, you should have just put that on your resume. So they were great, and I loved working there. And then when I moved on from there, I worked for the Salvation Army up in Everett, and ran some homeless, well, I didn't run homeless shelters. We had scattered housing, and I started a case manager, which I didn't know. I wanted to volunteer, and the captain there saw me interacting with the people in the food line and asked me if I wanted to be a case manager. You know, and I was like, I don't even know what that is. And I always, you know, Bob's a generic name, but from Fremont. I'm gonna take a drink. Because there's lots of Bobs from Fremont, but this one Bob, I love Bob. And it was interesting, you know, later I found that, well, I knew he was a vet, but I wasn't, like, I love veterans. I'm fascinated by serial killers. It turns out they're kind of like intermingled, but that's just not a serial killer. But I love veterans, and I love the homeless, and I just love doing that stuff. And I remember him sitting in Fremont Hall. It was a Saturday, huge meeting, couldn't find seating, and he sat down, and then there were some seats not by him, and he had pissed himself again. And I remember I had some money because I got in a motorcycle accident, because when I first got sober, I didn't stop doing what I was doing, and my friend had some escorts going to Sturgis, and I'm like, get me on that boat. I've always wanted to go to Sturgis and get paid. And I did, and I was the one who ended up in a motorcycle accident, but the lady that I went with sued him, and anyway, I got some money from that. And so I had nice money, and Bob was there, and people weren't being very nice, and I couldn't believe it, because all these old timers, and I was like, you know, people get tired of or whatever, but for some reason it just, and what's cool about Fremont is that you can cause a scene and yell. I mean, not that I didn't, but I was whatever. And nobody really knows or hears you. So it's a great place for me to get sober. And I took him, and then there's another guy that lived in Georgiana's house. And there was all guys there, and I couldn't have a chair at my house because it was a women's officer house. And so he called, and she said yes, and I got to go get him some clothes and a new sleeping bag and all that stuff. And so when I went up to, and I didn't like even, didn't even, whatever, it's just what I did. And then when I started volunteering and then doing this working at Salvation Army, I'm like, oh, like I didn't even know you people got paid to like work with homeless or like help them. Cause I just was so disconnected from the real working world, and like the world I came from was like make believe. And it was like, God has always been there kind of like setting me up. I always had animals when I was little, and then my cats would be mice or rabbits and the gardener snakes, and I'd wrap them up and send them on their way. So it was like, that was part of the vet tech stuff. Like I knew, I was like, I was already taking care of animals and then the homeless. And so my sponsor just walked in, la la, and the crowd goes wild. And so I just every time I look back at my life, like, you know, and before I started working at the vet clinic, I volunteered at Paula's Wildlife Center. And I remember the little cute chipmunks. I was so glad nobody was in the room, but I was in the room. They're like, yeah, you got to feed them with this. And it was a little syringe, didn't have a needle on it, with brown stuff in it. And I was like, and I just had this moment freaking out by myself, like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God. And it was like, this thing came over me. It's like, yes, Angel, there's another reason. You don't know. There's another reason for these things. Like, you can help save little lives with them and not stick needles in your neck and kill yourself. And so, yes. And so I was just like, wow. And that day I drove out of there, and it was a new freedom from that. And I used to go on Sundays to the vet clinic because it was closed, and we'd take turns to take care of the animals that were in-house. And my boyfriend at the time came with me, and he partaked in things I used to do as well. And he looked up because they were all lined up from 0 to 60 mL. And he just stood there like with his jaw to the ground, and he's like, how do you work here? And I'm like, I don't even think about it. Like, the obsession's been lifted. You know, I asked God a lot, and I didn't know who that was or what that was, but I was always praying to that. And I had that one sponsor that had me do all the weird things. One of the weird things she said to me that I thought was weird, but I pass it on because it's amazing, is like, if I don't have a God, like, who have I seen change in the program? And there was only the one guy that, and he used to be a client. We're now married, actually, and he's been sober 18 years. Then he became president. But he changed. Like, he got the steal first, and that's how I got sober, actually. He kidnapped me and took me to detox. But she said, well, pray to his God, right? Because it must have taken a really big God or something bigger than him to change him. She said, so borrow whatever he's using because it's working. And so I did. And the greatest gift, you know, is I don't see things that are right in front of my face. Like, I'll probably ask later where my glasses are, and they're on top of my head. That happens frequently, but it's always in the rear view, or always, you know, when I get to be quiet and like look like, God was with me all along. I put myself in situations where there actually was serial killers in Riverside. I found out, and I was out there hooking at the time, and there was somebody out there killing hookers, and I obviously am here. And there's just so many things like that, and I'm sure we all have stories like that, but it's like, wow, like, you know, my life, I'm always pinching myself. I kind of feel like I'm not even here now. Does anybody see me? No, just kidding. I don't feel like I'm in my body most of the time. I just always, like, this whole thing is an outer body experience because of the places I get to go. And it's not, like, the travel, but it's the people I get to see when I go. Because when I travel, I don't go to, like, everything you see on Instagram. I want to go meet the people that I can't even speak to, and I need an interpreter because I want to know what their life was like. All of this was taught to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. Like, I love to hear your stories. I want to get to know you more. Because, like, we're pretty amazing people when we get out of our own way and let God in and work with others. I'll just sing my way out because there's a microphone. No, just kidding. And there's nobody here. There's, like, nobody. So for the recording, there's a small crowd. But it's the perfect crowd because I get my sponsor, my grand sponsor, my sponsee. So I'm just grateful that I got asked to do this, and I was able to come, and I wore a little skirt for Austria, and my grand sponsor should be so proud. I get to see people that I love, and I get to make new friends, because, you know, wherever I go, here I am, and there you are, everywhere. So thank you.